Okay, Alexander, let's revisit the Flynn story and specifically get into the handwritten notes via the FBI that, in my opinion, proves without a shadow of a doubt that they were looking to take out Flynn with the grand scheme to take out President Trump. That was their goal, a coup d'etat on a United States president. And those handwritten notes confirm that without a shadow of a doubt. Now, of course, the mainstream media, the neoliberal mainstream media, their hamsters are running in overdrive trying to explain away these FBI handwritten notes. And you sent me a Washington Post article, which has the title, 15 minutes after pledging not to lie, Trump's new press secretary made an obviously false claim. And his new press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany, they're saying that she lied about the handwritten notes and the whole Flynn case that's unfolding before us. Alexander, a quick shout out to Eric Zeus, one of our contributors, a great investigative journalist.
Absolutely.
Who also urged us.
And historian.
Yes, and historian. And he also has a couple of excellent books as well. Mm. I'll put a link in the description box down below to him and I think his how to reach him and his books and all the information on Eric. But he urged us that there's a lot of digging that we can do here. And his note was really kind of cool because it was kind of like, you know, don't let Comey and these guys, I'm paraphrasing now, Eric, don't let them get away. That kind of sense. You know, and here we have these stories. We have the mainstream media, the fake news, lying mainstream media. Their hamsters are in overdrive trying to excuse away these handwritten notes. And your comment to me was, if you just kind of look at everything that's said and look at the evidence, what did you say? Even a tool can, even the most dullest of tools can figure this out, what's going on. You said something along those lines. Anyway, Alexander, go take it.
What is happening, a lot of the media is now taking their tune from some claims that actually originate with the Lawfare blog. The Lawfare blog is this incredibly virulent anti-Trump blog that is churning out a lot of these legal arguments and theories and has been doing so for a long time throughout Russiagate, throughout Ukrainegate. They're the people who come up with these things. And actually, one of the other articles that Eric Zeus sent us was this extraordinarily long article by Lawfare on their blog, which goes on for, you know, page after page of discussion of these notes. And one thing to say is that when something, a legal point, is being made to death, when it looks long and complicated and intricate and difficult to follow, especially if it's written by a lawyer, you know that he's completely not true. The lawyer is trying to mislead you or is trying to conceal something. Lawyers in Britain even have this expression, which you sometimes see on the margins of legal documents, BBB, BS baffles brains. And that is exactly what this is. It's BS trying to baffle your brain. Now, those notes in black and white are extremely straightforward. They're very clear. What they say is, what they show is that various people, before Flynn is questioned, are already considering various routes towards certain results. One is to get him convicted under the Logan Act. The other is to get him fired. The other is to get him involved in a perjury trap. I mean, this isn't, you know, you actually look at the words. That's absolutely clearly what this is all about. Now, ask yourself this fundamental question. What was Flynn being interviewed about? Why did the FBI, why did Peter Strzok and this other FBI agent, why were they sent to interview Flynn? What wrongdoing or crime was Flynn being investigated for at that time? Now, we've learnt as a result of all these new revelations that Flynn was being investigated right through 2016. There was a massive counter-espionage investigation because he was suspected of being, believe it or not, somehow involved with the Russians. We know that by this point, that investigation had come up with absolutely nothing. Not things that, you know, were slightly peculiar or unusual. They came up with absolutely nothing. So there's no reason anymore to think that Flynn is involved with the Russians at all. They've already cleared him of this. He's spoken to the Russian ambassador. Remember, he's the national security advisor of the president-elect of the United States. That's what these sort of people do. He's spoken to the Russian ambassador, had a number of telephone calls. The FBI has the transcripts of all those calls. They go through these calls. There is nothing there. There's no crime committed by these calls. I really want to come back to this. So why are they interviewing him? There's no obvious crime. There's no reason to think he's a Russian agent. What are they interviewing him about? About calls of which they already have transcripts. They know what they know what he said. They know better what he said than he does. Because in these notes, they're discussing the fact that they're not going to show him these transcripts or even tell him that there are such transcripts. Or even, in fact, I happen to know that there's a report. They actually did a report about these calls. There was actually a report discussing within the FBI what went on during these calls. So they're not going to show him any of that. They know he did nothing wrong or inappropriate during these calls. And they know that he's not a Russian agent or asset, even in any kind of form. So why are they interviewing him? What are they talking to him about? Well, we know, because it's there in black and white. They're going to try and trick him into admitting that he might have violated the Logan Act. This is this bizarre act from 1799, which was last prosecuted in the 1850s, and which has never resulted in a single conviction. They're actually talking about that theory. There cannot have been a single person in the FBI who took that at all seriously. And they're also talking about perjury, maneuvering him into perjury, and they're also talking about getting him fired. That's why they interviewed him, not to find out anything, because they know it already. They know it better than he does, and they're not investigating a crime because they already know there hasn't been one. And what do? They don't come along and tell Flynn, well, you know, we've got this investigation. We need to ask you some questions because you're a suspect. Remember, he's not a suspect actually of anything. You know, We're not interviewing you as a suspect, but we want you to ask you some questions. And you don't need a lawyer present. Apparently, you know, Andrew McCabe spoke to Flynn over the telephone and told him, you don't need a lawyer. And this is all done, you know, incredibly informally. So there you go. This is a clear, and they are talking in the context of such a discussion about a potential perjury trap. It could not be more straightforward. Now, to say that it is entirely routine for police officials before setting up an interview like this to lay out possible flowcharts and tactical options in that way, which talk of things like perjury traps, talk of things like trapping the witness, or trapping trapping this person into some kind of admission that he might have committed an offence under the Logan Act, getting him fired. To actually talk about all of that, that is not routine behaviour. God help us if it's routine behaviour. I sent you before this interview before we did this video, a copy of a video that Trey Gowdy, who remember is a federal prosecutor. I mean, well, go on.
Let me get to that then. But yeah. To be fair, let me your quick comments from the Washington Post article, Alexander. Let me read you the excerpt as how the Washington Post is rationalizing the Flynn notes. And then you can comment on this, and then I have a couple of questions about the Gowdy interview. So this is what the Washington Post says. The notes do include the phrases, quote, get him to lie and get him fired, but not in the context of being explicit, established goals of the interview. They are posed as questions about possible ways of confronting Flynn, not as a plan of action. What's more, there's no we need to get Flynn to lie statement at all, as McEnany asserted. Even aside from the context surrounding the notes, her presentation makes the situation seem more explicitly hostile to Flynn than it was. These guys have a lot of balls to come out with dumb statements like that. Anyway, your comments as to how the Washington Post is rationalizing this.
Dumb statements. I mean, that's complete. That is absolute BS. It's exactly what I said. It's a total BS argument. Now, I mean, can I just say something else about the Washington Post? Isn't it interesting that rather than wanting to talk about what was actually in the notes and analyzing the interview, they're trying to divert it onto what somebody else, a Trump administration spokesman is saying. So, you know, they're trying to shift the focus away from the FBI into someone on the Trump administration. It's absolutely nothing to do with this. Already the whole article is a diversion from the contents of the notes itself. But, you know, passing the notes in that way, you talk about, you know, this isn't, you know, well, what is this thing? What do those notes say? Is it typical to talk about, you know, what might happen, you know, if he lies, talking about possibility of getting him fired? You suggest in all seriousness that this is just, you know, discussing airing of possibilities. What possibilities? The purpose of interviews with police officials is to assist an investigation of a crime. That's what that is for. It's not for, you know, talking, well, you know, if he lies about this, we'll send it to the Justice Department. If he, we'll get him sacked. That's not what interviews are supposed to be for. This is complete nonsense. And if you actually read that memo properly, it's absolutely clear that's not what it says. It's just, as I said, an attempt to play around with words to make the words look different from what they actually are. And note again the enormous amount of interpretation that is going into those words. Now, can I just say again, this is not by any stretch of the imagination routine police procedure, or at least it shouldn't be. If it is, then God help us. Maybe under Stalin it was, exactly, but it should not be. It's not regular police procedure. What should have happened, if there was a serious investigation, is that Flynn ought to have been informed that he was being interviewed as a potential suspect. He should have been invited to have his attorneys present. His White House counsel should have been informed about it. And we should certainly not have had these kind of hole-in-the-corner discussions taking place. And, of course, all of this, every single part of this, should have been provided to his defense lawyers and to the court when a decision was taken to bring charges against him. So, you know, it's just complete diversion onto a Trump administration aide who, as I said, has got nothing to do with this story. And it's a complete misreading. It's a twisting of this particular document. Can I just come back to the point about the purpose of this interview? Andrew McCarthy, who is another federal prosecutor, I mean, Trey Gowdy is a former federal prosecutor. Andrew McCarthy, who writes for National Review and who also is a regular Fox News contributor, he's also a federal prosecutor. In an article, he actually quotes a comment from, I think it was the Senate Judiciary Committee. I may have got the one of the congressional committees. And they say that no official from the Justice Department or from the FBI that they discussed this interview with, this meeting between Flynn and the FBI agents, none of them could come up with a clear explanation of why this interview took place. They each come up with completely different stories and theories, and they include people like Sally Yates, they include McCabe, they include Comey. Every one of them comes up with a slightly different explanation or reason for why this interview happened, even in their own minds. They struggle to rationalize and explain it. The reason they can't explain it is because it was a perjury trap. And that is what that memo says.
Yeah, and Comey admitted it during his interview with Nicole Wallace. I mean, he said it. He said, I sent them in. He pretty much said, I sent them in because the Trump White House at that moment in time still didn't have its act together. And he said, I knew I could catch them in a perjury trap. That was what he was basically saying to Nicole Wallace in the audience. They weren't ready, so I sent these two guys in because I knew I would be able to snag Flynn.
I know,
and he was proud of it.
He was proud of it. Well, I mean, for me, it contains these damning words. You know, I knew I could get away with it. I mean, the senior police official, the most important police officer, police official in the United States, brags about getting away with something. I mean, you know, it's shocking. It's just beyond appalling. And I, again. Cut through all these rationalizations, all these attempts to interpret these words. Look at what they say. Look at what they say. And ask yourself again, I come back to this, what was that interview for? They can't provide a coherent, rational explanation for it because the tape papers show what it was really about. It was an attempt to trap Flynn. That's all it was.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to Gowdy then. Trey Gowdy was a Martha McCallum. And what were your impressions of the Trey Gowdy interview, Alexander? Two quick things that I jotted down as I was watching that interview. The first point was he compared how they handled Flynn, the FBI, how they handled Flynn to how the FBI handled Hillary Clinton, which I thought was an excellent comparison by Gowdy. And the second part, which kind of left me a little deflated, was Trey Gowdy said, don't expect any prosecutions coming out from this, but expect reform at the FBI as to how they work and how they operate. So those were the two points that I jotted down. Your views on the Trey Gowdy interview.
Well, I mean, can I just say his analysis is brilliant and it's, as always, absolutely spot on. I mean, he compares the fact, you know, that when Hillary Clinton was interviewed over the fact that she was using a private server to, you know, send classified emails once she was Secretary of State, and the fact that that is a clear criminal offence. And in fact, we've had the whole catalogue of what the FBI did. We've had reports, detailed reports from the FBI Inspector General Michael Horowitz, who goes to shows the extraordinary lengths the FBI went to protect Clinton, and how when she was interviewed, she's. As Gowdy puts it, half a law firm there in the room with her. How, the law firm, these very same people basically agree with the FBI on destruction of emails. I mean, destroying evidence. How it's a completely, I'm going to use the word, collusive investigative process. The supposed investigators collude with the supposed suspect, It could not be more different than what they did to Flynn. Flynn is drawn into a discussion with FBI agents who clearly are out to get him. And it's not explained to him how. He's not got his counsel there. And they lead him on into what eventually turns out to be a perjury trap. Whereas with Hillary Clinton, they bend over backwards to do everything they possibly can to help her. Already, that is a very bad comparison. I'm going to make another one, which I've seen someone else make, with Andrew McCabe. Andrew McCabe is known to have lied. It's in Michael Horowitz's report. He's known to have leaked documents. It's in Michael Horowitz's report. Again, crimes. No indictment. Flynn is got for lying. McCabe lies. Flynn is convicted. Why not McCabe? Again, this extraordinary disproportion. And I was very disappointed to see that Trey Gowdy, who is a person for whom I have had great respect, both as a lawyer and as somebody who talks constant sense throughout Russiagate and Ukrainegate, I was very disappointed to see him say that he wasn't looking for indictments, when, to my mind, this is behavior which absolutely merits indictments. I mean, people who behave in this fashion, talking about reforms, you can't reform a system like this. This is a system that's completely out of control. What you have to do is basically identify all the people who are doing these terrible things and punish them. And punish them, obviously, according to law, but do so. Otherwise, where is the law? It really does become, you know, what the ancients used to say, you know, the spider's web that can only catch the small flies, but not the big ones. I mean, it's not law anymore, if that's what it is. So I'm very disappointed to hear Trey Gowdy say that. I hope he's not hearing stories from within the Justice Department that there's already been a kind of political decision not to proceed with indictments. I am not sure about that. I get the sense that Barr, who's the Attorney General, is taking all this very seriously. And I think he probably is heading towards indictments. Certainly in what he discussed about the Durham investigation, that was certainly the impression I got. But, you know, I hope that Gowdy isn't basing this on inside information. And talking about reform is just wrong. I mean, it's just absurd to my mind. I would say that, of course, as a former federal prosecutor, Gowdy was himself part of the Justice Department system. So he may, to some extent, be protecting an agency that he worked for. But, you know, put that aside, frankly, I think this is so bad. If one cares for the Justice Department, and one cares for the FBI, and I was once, by the way, somebody who had great belief in the FBI, then I think you really need to clear this out. And that means going after the people who did these terrible things.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I definitely agree. If there's no indictments, prosecutions come out of this. I don't know. I don't know what to say.
You talked about Stalin's Russia. I mean, I'm a historian. I've read all kinds of. I read fairly recently a very, very fine book by I think he was at Yale University on the investigation, the so-called investigation of the Sergei Kirov murder in the 1930s. It's exactly what Stalin's police people used to do. Exactly like this, you know, maneuver people into saying things which were then used in order to destroy them. It's exactly that kind of behavior. And this is happening in the United States in what still claims to be a constitutional republic with the Constitution. The law, the founders, most of whom remember were lawyers, would have been horrified. That's exactly what they created the Constitution to prevent. So, of course, you punish it. You can't do otherwise. Otherwise, your Constitution isn't working anymore.
Exactly right. Alexander Mercurs, Editor-in-Chief of the Durant. Thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Smash that like. Go to PayPal, Patreon, and subscribe star. And donate. Help us out a little bit. And go to the Durant shop. Pick up some merchandise. Magic mugs, t-shirts, polo shirts, all kinds of good gear for the summer that is coming. Alexander, you've got a magic mug there as well. I think the same magic mug.
Absolutely. I think we've got different ones. I think you've got, yes, I think this the one I have is the one with the badge of the Russian Federation on it, which is the double-headed eagle of the Russian Federation. Not exactly the same as the Romanov one of the Russian Empire, by the way, but of the present Russian Republic. So it's a different one. It's particularly elegant, I find, because it shows off the mug so well. It's one of the reasons I like to show it on the program, because obviously you've got all the beautiful emblems and logos that we have on other mugs, but with this one, you can see the beauty of the mug itself, how light and strong it is, how beautifully it balances the size, so that you have plenty of coffee or tea there. So, you know, if you're thirsty, you've got your coffee or your tea. As I said, hopefully the hot days are coming, and you know, you can have your iced beer there too, or your champagne. So you can have a good deep drink, and it won't just sort of, you know, die out on you quickly, because you've got lots of it there. And it keeps it, by the way, this is the amazing thing about this mug. It keeps the tea, or the hot, or the beer cold, or the coffee hot, or the champagne cold. It's quite remarkable, but I suspect, if I can say definitely, that's because of the quality of the porcelain body. It acts as a sort of temperature regulator, which is what porcelain, by the way, good porcelain, ought to do. And it's not just does that, it's just a beauty to see and hold. All good quality things do that. They are just a joy to handle and to hold. When you hold a cup like this, when you drink from it, you know immediately that it's something of the best quality. Now, I'm of course the great expert, the worldwide expert, the leading expert on coffee mugs. As I said, I've had hundreds, thousands of them, but so do our viewers, those who've bought these mugs. The reviews we get from them, the feedback we get from them is fantastic. So they're the best mugs in the world. And through what is for all of us a difficult summer, well, you can't get a more sustaining and wonderful mug than this. And by the way, amazing quality also extends to everything else in our shop, to our amazing shirts. As you can see, I'm wearing a t-shirt now because it actually got a lot warmer suddenly here in London. And it's an amazing 100% superbly made, high quality, very strong t-shirt. And of course, you can see there that it's got the double-headed eagle of the Durant on it. We've got long sleeve t-shirts. We've also got V-neck shirts, all of the same quality. And we have our famous, absolutely outstanding polo shirts, which are the best polo shirts you can find anywhere. They are the most stylish and elegant polo shirts. And we've got lots of other things. We've got hats, we've got hoodies and stickers. And we also have ebooks now, and a growing catalog or library of ebooks that you can access. There's a very, very good one on Russiagate, which describes the whole ghastly story of Russiagate, and it touches on Flynn. And we also have Ukrainegate, a book on Ukrainegate. We have a book on Epstein, which is a strange story which we shouldn't forget or overlook. It's a very, very interesting story about the world we live in today. And of course, we've got books on Brexit, big topic. And a new one on the oil price crash, which is quite an event that's had a big impact both on the world internationally and on the shale oil industry in the United States. So you will find all of these things in our shop. As Alex said, you help us out by buying these things, and you help yourself by owning them, because they are of such quality. So don't hold back. Come to our shop. buy these things, these great things. Alex will tell you how.
Just go to thedurandshop.com. You'll find the link in the description box down below. Alexander McHurst, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.